It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 630 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week it's time for another excellent Kickstarter doubleheader. First up is Invader Comics Editor-in-Chief Mike Perkins and still creator Eli Powell. Then it's the return of Mechaton creators Dalton Shannon and Wells Thompson. First, Mike introduces us to Invader Comics, an up-and-coming company that's taking on the comics industry by storm. Then we discuss Still, Eli's new graphic novel. This book is being funded right now on Kickstarter, and it's described this way. The follow-up to Eli's brutal book Ravage, Still tells a tale of loneliness, fear, and redemption. We talk about how Eli and Mike worked together to make this book happen, who the characters are, how the art was created, and what else we can expect from Eli and Invader Comics in the months ahead. Be sure to back this project before it concludes on Sunday, March 10. Then everything wraps up with the return of Mechaton creators Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon. They have a Kickstarter currently underway for the book's first volume, which is described this way. A slacker, an artist, and a witch discover an alien glove that turns anything it punches into a pilotable mech. It's got 108 completed pages. We catch up on what they're up to, what's included in the first volume, and what's coming our way from them in the next few months. This Kickstarter will conclude on Wednesday, March 6th at 12 noon Eastern Time, so be sure to back this project once you've finished listening to this great interview. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they all have to say. There's a lot to get through in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Close your windows, lock your doors, we're coming for you. We're invading the spaces we have no business being in, knocking down the barriers that have kept you separated from the stories you need to read. Don't try to run, don't try to hide, we're everywhere and we'll find you. That's the description of Invader Comics on a Kickstarter that's going on right now. And right now I have the pleasure of talking with the editor-in-chief, and that's Mike Perkins. And how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Wayne?
Good, good. Let's introduce the other person. That's the creator of Still, an 84-page hand-drawn graphic novel. How are you doing, Eli?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to talk with you guys. Let's start off with Invader Comics. I do have to say that I really love Neurochron, I think, was the first one that got me onto you guys. And this Still is another great book. I'm just fascinated by the stuff that you guys do. Sometimes it's the smaller companies, I think, that do the better stuff. And I just think that this is the stuff you guys are putting out is just amazing. So, Mike, why don't you tell us about Invader Comics?
Sure. I mean, I would absolutely agree. It's the smaller guys that are doing really the best stuff out there. And that's pretty much why Invader exists. You know, I grew up reading comics. My brother is a comic illustrator. He works for Dark Horse. He's done Gregory Suicide, Goblin. He's got Wolf in the Well coming out this July. So we grew up doing comics together, obviously. And like a lot of people, I walked away from comics in high school because I discovered girls, amongst other things. but I was lucky in that my break wasn't as long as a lot of people's. I came back as soon as Preacher hit the stands. And that was like nothing I'd ever read because I'd only read superhero books up to that point. And it really blew me away that those kinds of stories could be told in this medium. And I never ever got over that. And so from then on, I was, you know, just frantically going to my local comic shop on Wednesday to get to the indie table. And I was just, again, blown away by the quality of the stories that I was finding there. And then later, when I sold my own book to a comic company and moved up and eventually became the editor, it was really my goal to find these stories, because I would walk around conventions and I would see these books like Eli's Still, where I was like, Jesus, these are better than not just what I'm seeing put out at DC and Marvel, but like what's even getting put out at Image and Dark Horse and even the smaller guys at this point. Like, there were all these stories out there that were just so well done, and creators who were out there doing the work, you know, not just, hey, I made a book, everybody love it, and I should be famous now. Like, out there hitting cons, doing the work, and still not getting the attention that they deserved. And that, frankly, bothered me. So when I got into a position to have my own comic company, I absolutely made it my laser focus to find those stories and try to amplify them and elevate them as much as possible and just tell the world.
Great, great. So when did you guys actually form? I mean, what was your first book?
So originally, Invader was 215 Inc. That's how I got into publishing. I sold a book to them, Beware, with my brother. And when we got there, this was right around the time that digital comics were coming into the world and Comixology and stuff like that. And a lot of the books at 215 Inc. were getting dinged for having just little errors, little problems. And at that point, I had been an editor for, you know, 10 plus years in my professional career. And so I said to the owner at the time, like, hey, let me just make sure that I'm crossing all the I's and dotting all the T's and, you know, getting these through to perfection so that they're not actually going to get dinged when we try to submit them. And so continued on with that, became the editor-in-chief there, became a partner, and became an owner. And then eventually the original owner walked away because of personal problems. So then this was around 2015 or so that I found myself with a company where the name didn't really mean anything to me. 215 is the Philly area code. I'm not from Philly. And so I continued on because we had a lot of books and creators and everything, but I always wanted to do it under my own banner. And so 2.5 years ago, we relaunched and rebranded as Invader. Our first book was Dr. Crow, which was a fantastic book that was put out by a creator named Corey Freya. Had Tony Gregory on there. Just, I mean, a huge, huge list of creators. From there on, we did Freaks and Gods, Three Protectors, Back to Fairytalia, Recall, All Hallows Eve, Keepsakers, Eli's Ravage, Darla, Animals, Unknown Color, Greetings from the Maglev, Enormous Vic Boone, Frank and Babe, and then Neurochron, which brings us up to where you found us, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I've got to ask you something, just because I, as a longtime comic fan, I've been reading comics since I was a kid in the 1960s. That's how old I am. And I'm currently fretting over the state of the industry. We're kind of in the middle of an economic struggle, and the first thing that people stop buying are entertainment things like comics. Yeah. How's Invader handling that? What kind of, obviously you're doing great content. That doesn't, are there other things you're doing to try to help get the word out about Invader?
Yeah, we are. We're trying to do absolutely everything and anything we can to just spread the word. And the tip of that spear right now is collaborating with local comic shops specifically. A lot of the reason that we rebranded and relaunched as Invader was to start a whole new model, which the Kickstarter model and direct, you know, dealing with our customers more directly is a large part of that. But a motivation behind that was because how hard local comic shops were hit during the pandemic. I mean, we just were watching shops close left and right. And obviously that's not something we want to see. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up going to my local comic shop, and I want people to still have that experience. And so we are trying hard to partner with absolutely any comic shop that will have us. You know, we were right there at Cape and Cowell's first con. We just did events at Mega Brain and Forbidden Planet in New York over this past weekend. And I think this is something that's not just beneficial to us, but to the comic shops themselves, because, you know, as we've seen conventions, comic conventions become entertainment conventions, you know, at best, and kind of ignoring comics to a large degree. I feel as though this is an opportunity for local comic shops to step up and take that over and say, like, hey, if you actually like comics, if you're actually looking to find out some cool stuff that you honestly might not hear about otherwise, this is a great way to do it. You know, hosting events that put creators and publishers right in front of people, give people a reason to come in, you know, make your comic shop a destination. So that's one of the big things we're doing. We're also trying to work with prisons, believe it or not, because I personally feel that comics are one of the best stepping stones into literacy. And one of the big problems that correctional facilities are facing is the low literacy rate of their inmates. And this is a problem from everything from the fact that, like, they don't, it's so hard for them to understand the benefits that are out there for them and support is out there for them when they can't read and they can't find out about that. And so we are working hard to not only get our comics into prison libraries, but to work with inmates themselves into how to express yourself through visual narrative fiction. Same way that we work with filmmakers, because we, you know, for someone like young kids today, if I can sound old for a second, visual storytelling is their lives. Whether you're talking about social media or just growing up into what they're going to need to produce in their jobs later on. And, you know, so many of them want to get into creating videos or creating movies or short form video content. And comics are a great way to learn the rules of visual storytelling. So we work with kids. We've done programs at different colleges where we teach kids how to make comics. You know, the creator of Boxboy and Keepsakers, Tayson Martindale up in Edmonton, he does a program working with kids, teaching them how to make comics. It's really a situation where we're just, you know, comics are for everyone, and we are trying to let everyone know that.
Wow, I'm happy to hear all that, because that's something new. I haven't heard prisons before. That's kind of new.
Invading spaces.
Yeah, that's the truth. It's great. Now, while we're on the subject of conventions and stuff, are there more conventions you guys are going to be doing in the future?
Yeah, Eli's going to be at ECCC this weekend.
Ooh.
Yeah, getting close.
Yes, it is. We're going to hit up Boston later this year. I think that I'm not sure which other ones we're doing. We're on the waiting list for San Diego. I know we're doing Monster Palooza. I know we're doing Phoenix Fest. We've got, you know, there's a long list depending on if you're talking about just like the core guys or all the creators.
So we keep track of those things like through your website. Is that the best way to do it, or social media?
Social media and sign up for our newsletter. Honestly, the best way to you know, social media is a mess. It's just a mess. You know, I can't tell you how many people who are some of our biggest supporters and closest followers, and I know they are following us on social media and will be toward the end of a campaign or promotion on a new book, and I'll just casually mention it to somebody and they'll be like, oh, I haven't heard about that. I'm like, I don't know how you possibly could have not heard about that, because I never shut up about it. But with the newsletter, you know, that's going to get you not only the information you need once a month about everything that we have going on that month, whether it's the books that we're releasing, the events that we're doing, the guests that we have that we're talking to, things like that. But also we give away some free comics in the newsletter and upcoming books and some books that aren't actually going to see print, just like little fun stuff that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's a great place to find yourself.
What's the website and address again?
Invadercomics.com.
Okay. Yeah, pretty easy. That's a good one. yeah. Cause sometimes the thing is that the internet is very, yeah, unforgiving when you misspell things. So we have to want to make sure that we get those things straight. Now, one of the things that you're involved with as editor-in-chief is working with creators and making books happen and stuff. And that leads us to the book that we're going to talk about. There's a Kickstarter going on right now for Still, as we mentioned previously. And I have to say, I got a chance to read it, and the only word I keep thinking is stunning. It's amazing. God, it's just I have, like I said, I found out about you guys in Neurochron, which I really love. I can't wait to read the second issue at this point. I'm also going to be I'm looking forward to other things that you guys do, and obviously you use crowdfunding to help support making books happen and stuff like that. So let me turn to Eli for right now, and let me see, Eli, how did you get involved in comics? How did you come to create Still? And, you know, what was your history?
Well, I've been creating comics my whole life, really. I mean, it started off as I was young, playing with action figures, and I grew out of those action figures, which I told stories with, and moved on to comics as my storytelling medium. Drew my own stuff all through high school, eventually went to art school, drew other people's books, which I enjoyed, but felt lacking at the end of the day in some ways doing that full time. And so I just like said, hey, I'll get like a day job and fall back and draw my own stuff. And yeah, that's how I, yeah.
Okay. Now, my understanding is, according to the Kickstarter page, says that Invader first published your graphic novel Ravage. Yeah. And it's described as a horror, terror storm of violence and brutality.
That was my first first solo project, and maybe I was taking my rage out on my life at the time, even though I don't really have anything to be mad about, really, but maybe the projects I was working on I wasn't really into, and I just like, I'm gonna do something that like pushes boundaries and shakes the earth and see how what ruckus I can come up with, I guess.
Yeah, shook the earth, man.
Now, Mike, you were working with Eli, is my understanding, and getting Still out. How did that process go? How did you do that?
So we first found Eli through Instagram, found some of the art he was posting about Ravage, and it just absolutely blew us away. I mean, the energy and the passion and the anger as well. And that, you know, that can be interpreted as a negative, but it's absolutely not. And Eli, you say you have nothing to be mad about. I think we all have something we can be mad about around here. But we were just blown away by Ravage, and we could just see the talent on every page. So as soon as we were done, you know, we were talking with Eli, and he was like, I've got other stuff. And so he sent us some of his other books that he had been working on or had completed, and we all were just immediately drawn to Still. And, you know, all of his books, it was literally a discussion of which one do we publish first. But we looked at Still, which was a wordless comic like Ravage is at the beginning. But, you know, whereas Ravage was very much we equated it a little bit to like Fury Road, where it's just nonstop. It's just from beginning to end, it's nonstop. With Still, there is a little bit more space to breathe, and there's more of a traditional narrative, but it was still wordless. And so I had talked to Eli, and I said, you know, this is fantastic. There's a couple of page shifts we were thinking about and little adjustments here and there, but we asked him, you know, what would you think about adding just some very slight VO? And we were very happy to hear that he goes, actually, I already thought about that, and I'd already written up some. And so we worked together to develop the VO and the letters, and we brought on Micah Myers, a Ringo Award nominated letterer, who I'm sure you're familiar with, bring those to the next level, which he absolutely did. Brought in Michael Nelson, our art director, to work up the covers that we have. And, you know, we do put all of our books in Kickstarter, but we do something a little non-traditional. Our Kickstarter campaigns aren't really to support the book. We always put just a $666 level on there. All it is an opportunity for you to get a unique cover to a book that's going to be solicited in Diamond and be in comic shops as well. So if you look on the Kickstarter campaign, you can see the Diamond cover, the one that'll be in comic shops that has the blue logo. And then we always do a unique cover for Kickstarter. And when we print those up, we do a little bit thicker of a cover, or we do a little bit nicer paper inside, because we really want to make it something special. So you get a nice metal bookmark with all of our books. And we always give away another free book with all of our campaigns to everybody who's backed it. We just wanted to make something special. That's really
okay. Okay. I was just sort of curious about the goal of $666. That worried me a little bit, but
I just thought it was fun.
The good news is, as we're talking, you guys have long passed that goal. People get on me because I don't do this soon enough. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Sunday, March 10. And we want to make sure that gets that goal. Right now, you are, almost four times beyond your goal. And hopefully by the time this posts, you'll be even farther. Yeah. And, so congratulations on all the success with that.
Thank you. Set a record for us. It funded in the first 2 hours. These aren't lofty goals. $666 is just a fun little number to throw up there, because we want to make sure that everybody knows that they can get this. You know, this isn't a situation where they might not. But we just only print up as many of the Kickstarter covers as are ordered. So these end up being extremely rare. I mean, extremely rare. You're talking about like 50 copies and that's it, ever, when we do not reprint these Kickstarter covers.
Well, let me read the description of the book as it is on the Kickstarter page, because I like that. It says, "When the sights and sounds of the snow-covered forest creep into the psyche of a hunter living alone in the woods, the consequences of his past actions begin to manifest as ghosts in the present. What's hidden in the still between the trees? Living nightmares of his own creation." And I have to say, Eli, I got to talk with you about this, because I'm always fascinated by these bigger, hulking, more quiet type of characters that really don't say much. But if you actually get them talking, you find out there's that still waters run deep kind of thing. I got that same feeling with this character, the main character here. So talk a little bit about that. I mean, where did the story come from and the character? How did you create this?
So at the time, first of all, like, Invader did a really good job of like summarizing it. Like, I could never summarize my work. I'm terrible at self-marketing. So they did a good job on that. But anyway, at the time I was watching a lot of this show Mountain Men, and it's about like kind of trappers and hunters like living in the wilderness. And I was just inspired by that and nature and this, yeah, nature. And sorry, my cat is on the table distracting me, but
that's anyway. Okay.
So I was inspired by that show and knew I wanted to do a big, husky, bearded man. And that just sort of came out of my head. I draw all my books sort of like freestyle, like really kind of loosely scripted. There's an idea in mind, but I just kind of see where it takes me and edit as I go. I'm kind of like a quiet, quiet person myself. So a lot of that was channeling myself into the character, I think, and picturing sort of like a guy living alone in the woods and being haunted by really like nature and nothing at all. Or is it just in his head the whole time or whatever, you know? That was kind of the inspiration behind that character, I think.
Okay. Now, the interesting thing to me is this book is largely black and white.
Yeah.
And that is perfect for the story, but I have to ask you, how did you draw it? Did you draw it and scan it in, or did you do it on the computer? How did you draw? Because, God, these pages, I had to put a sweater on. It made me feel so cold.
Yeah, I've always thought about color in my work, but for this one, I definitely like the stark contrast of black and whites. I drew it all in a single sketchbook, which we're giving away rewards of original art. And so I'll be cutting out pages from it, and which makes it even more of the rare because it's like it was a limited, I think, 84 page sketchbook. And so I'll be cutting out pages of that. But yeah, it's all hand drawn. The color, the page is actually an offset white. And so it's slightly yellow. So when you own the original art, you can see sort of like where I went back in with the white paint and the white out and the white ink and really see the textures and layers to it, which when I scan, I scan it all into the computer and flatten it for printing purposes just to make it look nice and formatted and everything like that. But,
We get to see some of that on the Kickstarter page. If you go down under story, you can actually see some of the pages on there that before they were scanned, apparently. Yeah. So just amazing. So I just have to say, I mean, you know, the drawing of the snow and the drawing, there's a picture of it looks like a skull with the snow around it. How did you do that? I mean, how did you do the snow? Did you I'm trying to figure how in the world you did that. How did you do that?
Kind of, I think it's in terms of like less is more. Like snow, you don't need a lot of shading on it. You don't need a lot of texture. Sometimes just like leaving it stark white with a stick poking out is like reads as snow, you know, and or making the trees solid black and then adding a flick of white ink splatter reads as like snow kind of coming up the trunk of the tree and leads your eye down to the ground once again, which is solid white and solidifies that snow on the ground. And it's hard to describe like the process as an artist because you just sort of do it over time. But then also like, you know, footprints in the snow can be black and lead your eye and it's all plays to the composition, really.
How long did it take you to put the pages together?
I can do a page a day on this one. Like, I hit strides of like maybe 2 pages a day. Some of my other books, I can do like 5 pages a day if I'm really inspired, but it's like kind of also teetering on a mental health thing. Like if I'm depressed one day, maybe I don't do a page. And I think during this book, there was some strides where I would go like a week or two without doing a page just because I was like bummed out but it got done. And I'm rather quick artist when I do draw. So, yeah. Sorry, that's my computer.
Oh, it's okay. I have to say that I was just stunned by how you talked about less being more. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but I don't think we ever find out the name of this guy.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think we do because I was reading it and I was thinking, who is this guy? You know, we see his family as it comes up in the story and stuff like that. But in a way, that was really good because he's an everyman. Then we can kind of relate to this character, you know. So I really was touched by the fact that, you know, normally the characters are named and you know the city they're in and all the stuff. This is actually so quiet and so little going on that I really felt like I was there watching it. So it's just superbly done. I just have to say, God, I loved it. It was so great.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because it was something that we discussed when we were first looking at Eli's work. Because the same with Ravage, you don't get to know the name of the main character. And there's another book that we've been working with Eli on that same thing. You don't actually get to know the name of the character. And so we were talking internally about this as the Wild Man trilogy. And we'd even talked about like maybe doing a collected omnibus of all three of these books together into like the collected Wild Man series from Eli at some point in the future. Although don't hold me to that.
Now, I do have to talk about the text, because as much as I love the art and I love the story and the pacing, the text really touched me. Now, Eli, you were talking that you and Mike, I guess, worked together on the text. Like, did you write most of it and Eli edited it? How'd that go?
Oh, that was mostly Eli.
Okay.
Yeah. He would send me like notes. He suggested I add voiceover, and I went through and did a whole like draft, and he would send me notes and, revisions and, suggestions and corrections and stuff like that. So it was a nice collaborative process, I'd say, too.
I try very, very hard not to get in the way of creators as an editor. I look to music producer Rick Rubin as a inspiration here, because he always said that I'm not a producer, I'm a reducer. And look at his job is like to just eliminate anything that got in the way of the core idea of the creation. And so I very much try to do the same thing when I'm working with creators. I don't want to inject too much of myself into any project, because that's not why I'm here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand perfectly, because I'm an editor as well. And I get so annoyed when people who go in and rewrite the story. Well, a story would be better if you did this and this and this. Well, that's not the person's story, you know. Yeah. I have to talk about the very first page. It says, in the snowy wood, ghosts are everywhere. I right away, just with the illustration and the text, was super. I was just like, I was transported into the still universe, maybe you should say, because it just got me. And I do have to say, as an editor, I appreciate the proper use of ellipses.
Oh, yeah, that's something that they had to correct me on.
Because, you know, I spend – there are people who send me scripts and stuff, and they never get that right. And I always have to say, okay, put the ellipses here, and then it's got to go someplace there. And that – when I saw that, I said, okay, not only is this good, it's punctually correct. It's just – I love that. So that was one of the great things I just thought was so good. And I daren't – this is one of those books that I daren't say too much, because I'm going to spoil something. And the important things that go on, I don't want to spoil, because you get a reaction. Something that happens very early in the story, and if I say anything about it, you're not going to get the reaction that I got. And I want people to get that reaction, because that whole thing just moved me. And, you know, I'm big on nature and animals and things like that. So when this thing happened, and when you read the book, you'll see it. I was so touched by it. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is really interesting how the main character interacted with nature and what kinds of things went on with it. Gosh, just I was so moved by this character. Like I said, these still waters run deep. And even with him, I really liked the character. So I kudos on not only creating a great universe, but creating a great and relatable and interesting character.
Oh, thank you so much.
Super duper great. It's well done stuff. Cause wow. All I can say is wow.
It like really speaks to the versatility of Eli as a creator too, because if you read Ravage, you know, like that description that we wrote up, you know, a horrific terror storm of brutality, that it really is. You wouldn't expect the kind of nuance and subtlety and atmosphere that you get with Still by reading Ravage. That's to follow up a book like Ravage with a book like Still, that really speaks to Eli's value and versatility as a creative force.
Wow. You should sell sweaters with these books. Because, man, you're going to need it when you read it. It's so good. Another thing I wanted to comment, I love the title still. So many times in comics, I have to ask, why did you call it such and such? Because it didn't make any sense to me. But still is the perfect title. I can't think of another word that could possibly be used to describe this. It's just excellent. I hate to keep gushing, but boy, I really did. It transported me to that, and I cared about what was going on. When it got to the end and stuff, I was I was just like, wow, okay, that was such an interesting ending. So good. That's good. So is this is a one-shot still is, Eli?
Yeah, it's a one-shot. And going back to like Ravage, maybe it's my form of redemption of myself. Like, oh, you know, I made this like terror storm of brutality, and now I'm following up with like a book about redemption and like remorse and what's the word, like grief, you know? But yeah.
It's just so great because I can't wait to see it. It's really, really good. Now, Mike, I wanted to ask you about something. Towards the bottom of the page, it says that you can not only you can also offer – they're offering special discounts on horror books, so don't forget to check the add-ons to grab copies of Darla, Recall, Animals, All Hallows Eve, and Enormous. And there's copies of the covers that are in there. They're fascinatingly done. I mean, you guys' choice of covers, I do have to say, is really spectacular. Unfortunately, one of the things you guys have to overcome is the current, you know, the trouble that stores have ordering exactly what the customers want. Yeah. And so we've got to get the word out about this good thing. That's why I'm glad I get to talk with you, because it just I want to see this in my local shop on the stands, because it just gets me. I would love to see it, particularly in the winter. This would be a wonderful book to have out.
God, yeah. You know, making the covers, which is something that we do, you know, I do in collaboration with the creative team and our art director, Mike Nelson, who is the creator of Supernaut, amongst other things that we put out. It's probably my favorite part of the job. And this whole thing that we're doing, the whole relaunch, was, as I said, largely inspired by the current situation, specifically around comic shops. I've known many comic shop owners, and I don't mean just like, oh, you know, I came in and buy comics. Like, I've known them quite well. And I've spoken to them, and I know the position that they're in. I understand that, you know, at the end of the day, so much of their capital is tied up in Marvel and DC because they want to get those special books that are going to bring people into their shops. And so I know that they have to order, you know, a ton of books in order to do that. And I know that when those books don't sell, they're going to get their money back, but that does tie up a lot of their operating capital. So they don't have a lot of money left over to experiment on a book from a creator or from a publisher like Invader if they don't know that that book is going to sell, because otherwise that's $10 of their money just sitting there on the shelf, not doing anything. So we knew that making just really, really eye-catching covers, the kind of covers that would get people to walk in and say, hey, I need this book, was going to be just core to our business. We just knew we had to do that. We could not fail on half-assing covers. They needed to be knockouts. And we also understand that, like, not everybody is going to do that, to walk into their local comic shop, which is why we do the Kickstarter thing, which is why you can pre-order all of our books on invadercomics.com. Like, you can just go ahead, and if you don't feel like messing around with Kickstarter, you can go on Invader and just pre-order still, and we'll mail it as soon as we get it. You know, we do that with all of our books. But no one's going to do that if you don't have a killer cover. So we made sure to put a lot of effort. And so to hear you say that makes me feel real good, Wayne.
Well, I do have to say, I was a big fan of 215 Inc. back in the day. I interviewed several creators from 215 Inc. on this podcast.
A lot of good stuff at 215, but when it came down, you know, when Andy left and I was the one holding the bag, I needed to make it something that was my own.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. I mean, you know, it's if you're the name on the masthead, it's got to be something you're proud of and you're happy with. So yeah.
That's as the much thing. As I love Philadelphia.
Now, I did want to ask one thing. One of the things that we talk about in the Kickstarter page is finding hidden gems. Was a phrase that I thought that was kind of good because, I always say this is that I regret that Kickstarter wasn't around longer because there were so many stories that we probably never got to read that we should have because there was no Kickstarter. They couldn't do it. DC or Marvel wouldn't pick them up, and so they never happened. So now I'm glad to see Invader is doing looking for the good stories that are out there. Just waiting to get, you know, like the talk about plucking, you know, in the trees and stuff like that. Obviously, it seems like all these things are so great, the things you're doing. How do you go about doing that? I mean, how do you find these good things? We talked about conventions and stores and things. Are you looking online? Like you said, you saw this app. I forget the name of the app that you were talking about. Yeah. Do you do those kinds of things? Is that how you find these people?
Nonstop, Wayne. Not literally nonstop. We are constantly combing through everything that we can find, looking for recommendations from people we already work with, going into our local, you know, the three partners of Invader live in Oakland, LA, and New York. So we've got a pretty good coverage with regard to like the major areas, and we have creators all over the country. So, you know, we have, you know, for instance, Enormous, which was a book that was originally put out by Image and then they dumped it. And so Tim Daniel, who is, you know, currently at Vault, brought it to us and we put it out. And he's been a wonderful friend. And when I relaunched as Invader, he was like, no, Enormous is still with you. This is the home. And so we'll do it. So through Tim, I met Adam Cahoon, who did Greetings from the Maglev. He's currently the main illustrator on the Nasty at Vault. But his first graphic novel, Greetings from the Maglev, nobody was putting out. I read it. It was fantastic. I desperately wanted to put it out, you know? So like it's a combination of just randomly finding people on social media or at cons. It's a combination of getting recommendations from people and introductions. And also our submissions are always open. So if you go to invadercomics.com and you go into the contact page, you can see our submission guidelines and we get books in all the time. And you know, it's pretty equal with regard to the amount of, you know, where we find these, you know, so we have completely unknown creators who have been putting out books for a while, but just haven't hit it big, and big names, which, you know, you know about the bigger names that we've put out, you know, the Tim Daniel, the Steve Orlando, the Jenny Wood, the Sean Aldridge, you know, like those guys, you know, they bring us their books too, because they know, I mean, like Steve Orlando is a perfect example. How many big books has he worked on? But he comes to them, to multiple different publishers, with a charming, charming young adult graphic novel called The Kitchen Witch. I can't tell you how good this book is. They trust him to tell Batman and Wonder Woman, but they won't trust him to tell his own story. That's just ridiculous to me. So we put it out, and it's just couldn't be better. And now I get to do things like put Steve and Eli together, and they'll be doing a book later this year.
Wow. So is the website the best place to keep up with these good things that you guys are up to? Is that better or what?
the newsletter, you sign up for the newsletter on the website. That really is the best way to do it, because that is the most consolidated, just all in one shot. You will find out everything that's happening that month. You will get exclusive offers and early bird stuff. You will get some behind the scenes stuff that nobody else will see, even, you know, on social media, stuff like that.
Great. Great. Oh, it's just, I have to tell you guys, just, I'm really excited about Invader Comics, because everything I've seen from you guys and what the stuff that's going is just, you know, a cut above, a way above what other books do. And, you know, I read my comics a certain way. I put the best comic, the one I expect to be best at the bottom, because I want to end on a good comic. I don't want to end on a bad one. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be putting Invader Comics to the bottom of the pile. Because, man, they just touched us good. Eli, I have to tell you again, you and Mike have created this fantastic book. It is just, God, I wish we could get it in everybody's hands, because I think people will be really, really surprised by how great the storytelling is. Because, gosh, it's just terrific, I have to tell you.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, we've always said that, like, our number one struggle is just getting people to pick up one of our books and you know, read it, because once they do, they're going to love it. It's just being heard above the din of everyone else.
Yeah. All the noise, somebody called it once. Okay. So Still is obviously already a success on Kickstarter. This is going to end again. Let me say the project will be funded. Of course, it's already funded. If it reaches this goal by Sunday, March 10. So as soon as you get done listening to this interview, be sure to get out there and support it, because it's great stuff. When this ends on March 10, is there another book that's going to be coming from Invader on Kickstarter?
Yeah, we do a Kickstarter every month. So with Still, the next one we're going to do is the second volume of Enormous.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna have to try to talk with that person too, because this is good stuff.
Well, we can see if we can get Tim on here for you. He's pretty big dude. You know, he's a famous guy. But we can see what we can do.
Okay. Well, whatever works, I'll be happy. I'm glad I got to talk with Eli, you, and Mike about this, because now I have a better understanding of Invader and a great understanding of Still, which is one of those great books it's one of the reasons I go to comic shops, is to pick up books like this. It's just fantastic. So all I can do is wish you guys much more success. Eli, keep it up. Keep doing the wonderful stuff you're doing.
Yeah, and all is working. So
good. Keep it. I keep working. As long as you're working, I'm happy, because we get through it. And Mike, keep Invader going, because, wow, I have to say, you've got a great comic company that everybody deserves to know about. So just keep it all up.
Thank you, Wayne. I'm not going to stop.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
A slacker, an artist, and a witch discover an alien glove that turns anything it punches into a pilotable mech. 108 completed pages in Mechaton Volume 1, a sci-fi action comic with mechs and kaiju. And it's great to welcome back to the podcast Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon, who are co-creators of Mechaton Volume 1, which is being self-published shortly. Let's see. Let's start out with Dalton. How you doing, Dalton?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's been a fun time with the new Kickstarter, and it's great to be back on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Let's talk to Wells now. I want people to get your voices right. Wells, how are you doing?
I'm feeling great. Had a great day. It's 50 degrees. And I went outside and my skin didn't hurt. So
Oh, wow.
Great day overall.
Well, it was that way down here where I live in Florida. So
I live in Chicago. So it's been frozen over for a little while.
Yeah, very different circumstances. Because believe me, down here, if it gets, you should see this place when it gets around freezing. And it happens like maybe once or twice a year at night. And the first thing that happens is on comes the weatherman. Get your winter coat out. Make sure you wear it all the time. It's going to be cold. It's hilarious for me, somebody who grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania with I'm used to the snow and the blowing and everything else in the world. But down here, they panic. So it's funny to watch. But
we're from Arkansas originally, so I'm very familiar with the it projected it's going to snow and suddenly there's no milk or eggs or bread anywhere in any store.
I think that the grocery stores have a contract with weather forecasters because I swear to you, especially I was in the Washington, D.C. area for a while. And what happened was they'd come out and say, it's going to be – when you wake up in the morning, it's going to be covered with snow. You're not going to be able to leave the house. So, of course, everybody goes to the store, buys all this, the perishables. I never forget the one time it was a Friday night. I woke up, I opened the blinds Saturday morning, bright sunshine. And I said, yep. I said, this confirms my suspicions.
You're a sea man.
they're out to get the food out of the store. So that's what it was. So anyway, that's where we're going. So it's, let's see. Some of this stuff we might have covered before because we've talked about Mechaton before. Yeah. But we also want to make it accessible to people who may not have listened to it before. So because people get on me, I have to do the logistics right away. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Wednesday, March 6th at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. I forget that. I get into the story and the characters and stuff, and I forget all that stuff. And so people get on to me about that. So right now, and we're recording this a little early, it's you are almost – you're heading straight for the goal right now of $3,000, so looking good. More – 80 backers right now, but I'm sure by the time this posts, you'll have a lot more than that. So it's good stuff. This book has really picked up a lot of steam and is doing very well. How are people responding to it? Because, the first initial issue came out from Scoot, which is a part of Scout. And again, I have to do a business real quickly. I help with Scout Comics in the background. So this is – I had zero to do with Mechaton. It's
Wayne has never worked on this book. We would never hire Wayne to work on this book. That's personal preference.
It's funny because, I do help. But some projects and stuff like that. This is not one of them, and that's why it's so good. It's because I had zero to do with it. So it's one of those good books, and I have a thing about what they call young adult or all ages stuff. Mm-hmm. That is one of the hottest genres. If you go into like Targets or other stores, they'll have a whole section devoted to this, and. I remember the days when I used to have to dig around to try to find a young adult novel, and now they're everywhere. So you guys are on the right path, I think. I hope one day that to see this. Right now you're self-publishing, but hopefully down the pike this will be in Target or Walmart or wherever, any place that you can sell it, because I think people will really enjoy it. So I got a chance to read the issues, which I really appreciated. It leaves me wanting more, let me just say. I'm not going to say
anything. All right, got him hooked.
Yeah, I more than that, I'm not going to say. But
I feel like there's a backhanded way of saying, it leaves you wanting more. Like,
well,
I know how you meant it. I appreciate it.
Okay, more than that, I'm not going to say. I don't want to spill the beans. There's a thing in there that I could be spoiling, but I'm not going to do it. So. Who wants to say what Mechaton is basically about or discuss it some more? Which one of you would prefer to do that?
I'll go first. Okay. Mechaton is a sci-fi action comedy about a glove that turns anything it punches into a mech, the brother and sister that find it, the single brain cell that they share, and the kaiju shenanigans that they – the adventures that they have along the way. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's about big trash monsters fighting bugs, but it's also about family and community and coming together and working with what you have.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add to that, Dalton?
It's got big robots, it's got big monsters, and if that's not enough to sell it, then I don't know what we're doing here.
The people make funny jokes.
Well, the thing that this reminds me most of is like Ben 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. like that. And I watched that kid grow up, basically. I watched when he got the watch until he turned into a teenager and all those kinds of things. So I was really hooked on the show. I liked it. And they would change the aliens he turned into along the way and stuff. But this is a very creative thing. What's fun about this one is that when he punches something, turns and it makes it into a kaiju. Is that the right term for that?
A mech would be that.
A mech.
Kaiju is a giant monster, usually based on some kind of real world animal, like mm-hmm. Mothra or Godzilla.
Okay.
Mech is a suit of armor that's pilotable.
Okay.
So similar to a robot, but not autonomous.
Because in the very first issue, he ends up punching a hot dog stand.
Yes.
Which becomes a mech, I guess is the perfect term to say. And it's kind of fun to see. And, of course, that's not the only thing he punches along the way. And, of course, this is a collection of how many issues? Five? Yes. Okay. So we got those good things here. There's a lot of good things going on. There's a lot of really and fun personal interactions happening. Character growth along the way, which is always fun for me. I enjoy those kinds of things. And there's room for lots more is with this book. Do you guys know? I mean, you know, if you had to say how many issues Mechaton would end up being, do you know how many issues you'd like to do?
263 with an annual, a zero issue, and maybe even a minus one issue.
I think our initial idea and plot and what we want to roll out is shaping up to be about 11 issues. With how we have things planned going forward, that's obviously somewhat in flux, but it's three main arcs, and we just got done with the first one. After that, you know, if people love it, if people want more of it, I would love to continue to make Mechaton forever. So I'm never going to say like it only has a shelf life of this long. I think there's a version of Mechaton that's very like mech of the week, monster of the week, and we can just keep it, you know, going for as long as it's fun to make. That isn't kind of how it's structured right now, but it could shift into that if we wanted to.
See, this screams... Well, unfortunately, Cartoon Network is skewing younger now, but this screams like maybe Adult Swim.
Toonami was what we were originally kind of, is like, that's the era of cartoons that we sort of grew up with and saw Mechaton as being that sort of like teenage later night, but not quite, you know, midnight run kind of deal. Maybe a lighter Adult Swim kind of show. Who knows?
Well, my problem is I see these things and I go, I can see this on television. I could really see this on a night show or something like that. So it's got the makings of it. Now, of course, if you got some sort of a if you punch something with a logo on it.
Yeah, immediately we're in trouble.
Yeah. I like the hot dog stand says hot dogs, which of course is nice and generic, so that doesn't have a
yeah,
problem.
I think the very first thing we ran into trouble on was as just a background detail, Derek's t-shirt had a video game logo mm-hmm. that as soon as we brought it to Scout, they were like, okay, get rid of that immediately. We are not going to publish that with the logo on it.
Because they come back and say, hey, you're using our logo to sell your book. And that means if you make money, we want part of that. So that's the bad news in there. So why don't we go into who the characters are? Let's see. Who's the main character, the first one that we meet along the way? Who's he?
That's Derek. Derek's a 20-something with no ambition outside of playing video games and being a nice guy. And if we can't all relate to that in some way, then you're not breathing, I think. Derek is a moron, but he's a moron with a heart of gold. And he really just wants to he wants to be in his lane and help when he needs to. And he just wants to live his life. And then he gets this, this new responsibility literally thrusted upon him by, his sister without his consent. And he, now has this glove that will allow him to, help even more people than he could in a boring pizza delivery kind of way. So, he's very much seat of the pants. He's not thinking ahead and he's not thinking about the consequences very often. And, he just wants to, have a good time. And, he's the emotional heart of the series, I think. And, the driving force definitely, but, Derek's a good time. He puns, and everyone loves puns.
Now, except for Leah, his sister. Leah does not like puns.
But he's not the one that originally finds the glove, right?
Right.
Correct. Yeah,
his Who's
sister
that
Leah.
Okay.
His sister Leah is dumpster diving for parts to make a sculpture, and it falls out of the sky and creates a huge crater and almost flattens her, but she survives unscathed and recovers the glove, becomes fascinated with it, and cleans it up and sticks it on Derek's hand to see what it can do. And that is all well and good, but unfortunately they discover very quickly it's not going to come off at all. And so they are quite literally stuck with it.
Now, what's interesting to me, though, is that she doesn't put it on herself.
Yeah, no, she's smarter than that. she's very much, I joke that they have one brain cell and Leah has it on loan permanently. But yeah, she definitely sees herself as kind of the leader between the two of them. And that shows in the dynamic of the fights. She's usually on the ground calling the shots, telling Derek what's happening in a more objective way so that he can execute a little bit cleaner. Because we see in a couple of snippets in the later issues, once he gets on his own, he doesn't think very well on his feet.
Okay.
So they have a really fun dynamic that's sort of inspired by backseat gaming, which as a little brother I grew up with, and now as a husband to a habitual backseat gamer, I now live on the other side of.
Okay. Because I noticed reading this book, and I'm sure, and I've read through all the five of them, and I saw the same thing going on. There's a lot of video game type references.
Mm-hmm.
Going on. When we see somebody, we get to see their description as well as their power level.
Yeah, that was equally, I think, it was a little video game inspired. It was equally anime inspired. We grew up with Code Geass and Dragon Ball Z and all sorts of things that are obsessed with putting arbitrary numbers on stuff. To explain how powerful it is, and so we thought it was a good joke to tell you that there was a power level, but then not give you anything concrete to do with that power level. Like one of them is a bit of a stomach ache. It's like, okay, that doesn't mean anything
unless you're a true fan and you get the trading cards, and then there are power level grids on the back of those trading cards.
Oh, you have cards as well? I hadn't seen those.
Yeah. They exist. They've so far been very limited. They've only come up in one or two campaigns, and we only wheel them out when the occasion calls for it.
Okay, because the first, and we got to get into where these come from too. There's creatures. Of course, you're going to have a Transformer-esque type machine. You got to have things for that to fight. And of course you need something big to fight. The very first one, if I'm reading this correctly, is a Dihedapod.
Mm-hmm.
It's described as an irradiated superbug alpha, power level gross.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a giant. Yeah. It's a giant cockroach. So of course it's gross.
So he ends up fighting that, and of course what happens is that appears before Derek gets to punch the. It's funny, out of frustration, basically he punches the hot dog stand.
Yeah, he doesn't know what he's doing at that point. It was just sort of a visceral reaction, and it worked out for him. But yeah, the glove kind of enters their life, and very quickly everything kind of whirlwinds around that. The monster shows up, and then he discovers that he has the tool to fight the monster, and then he has to actually do the thing, which is a lot harder than it looks.
Now, you guys explain where the monsters come from.
They're in the introduction of the glove. When Leah finds the glove, all of those monsters are gathered around the glove. They're just regular insects that get irradiated.
I'm normally a lot more cryptic about it because we purposefully don't go into detail, at least yet, about where the monsters are coming from. But yeah, if you look at that introductory scene of the glove cratering into the earth, surrounding it is a cockroach, a dung beetle, and a mosquito, and they become our first three big villains of the comics. So there's a little bit of implication about what the glove is doing and how that could affect future issues.
Now, we do know where the glove has come from, and that's going to impact the story moving forward too, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. The very first scene of the first issue, it takes place as almost a sort of like Star Wars kind of introduction with characters that we meet very quickly and then don't see for a long time. But it sort of sets the context for people are fighting over this glove, and they aren't going to be out of the story forever.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I really like too is I always wondered why this never happened, but at the end of the first issue, what happens is the police show up on the scene. Boy, how nice that is to see for a change. And they tell them to put their hands up, and the interaction with the police I found very entertaining as they go through the book. Because they... Of course, they don't want to get arrested and stuff like that, but they do have some interactions that I got a kick out of.
And I'm glad you found it entertaining. I had a pit in my stomach the entire time I was writing it.
Why? Because I found that really – because, number one, you don't see the police very often in these kinds of things. And number two, because they're the age group that they are, they don't necessarily behave the way that some of us would. So I like that.
Yeah, no, it was – it was fun to set up that dynamic, both because like there's a bit of a motif of like, you know, people who have power versus people who get power, who quote unquote don't deserve it. And also just like how, you know, real power structures tend to play out. You know, Derek and Leah are young kids, and they're pretty consistently, you know, framed in the light of like, oh, you're doing something wrong. I mean, they're not that young, but they're younger. So it was, you know, it seemed like, well, logically, what would happen if a giant bug hit, you know, started smashing up downtown, and you created a giant mech to fight it? Well, of course, the police are going to show up at some point. Someone called the cops, because what else are you going to do in that scenario? And like, that's not the kind of interaction that either side is going to take lightly. So seeing how it affects Derek in issue two, and how their rapport develops over issues three and four, that kind of became the sort of backbone of the first arc. Is sort of dealing with the local authorities and how it rubs up against, you know, the way they want things to work, which is a lot simpler than mechs and kaiju running around town.
Well, I like the way they say, step away from the young lady and drop the weapon. And his response is, I'm pretty sure it only shoots ketchup anyway. which made me laugh because, you know, it is a hot dog stand.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for that. But
yeah, a running theme throughout probably like the entire series is Derek and Leah in an opposition to some kind of authority figure. And it, I mean, the levels of authority continue to escalate as do Derek and Leah's responses. But them navigating these kind of power structures and trying to figure out how best to help their community through that is kind of it's the beating heart of the story, I think.
Well, I get a kick too from the response to the people around them. The guy that owns the hot dog stand is saying, that they saved your town, kid. What's wrong? Mm-hmm. The other guy who owns the waifus only place, that thing destroyed my waifu.
I still don't know if he owns that shop or if he's just a very enthusiastic patron. But yes, he's very upset at the idea that they busted up his favorite shop and he might have to go without for a little while.
Well, his response is, I want justice. I want blood. And then the other guy says, well, the monster that was the threat and they stopped it from harm, son, that's the work of a hero, not a criminal. I get it. So I love that the discussion is going on amongst different points of view among that. So I thought that was really wonderful the way that happened. So
there's, especially now, there's very rarely like a monolithic point of view when anything happens, you know, that's newsworthy or that's big or that affects your community. There's very rarely like a monolithic, like everyone agrees that it was good and everyone agrees that this is, you know, occasionally you get that, but, it felt, you know, we did start writing this version of the story during what, early pandemic, essentially. So it felt very pertinent to be like, people wouldn't just agree Derek is a hero right away. He'd have to earn it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And then, of course, I won't say what happens, but they don't get arrested right away. And then, of course, we get introduced to the third character in the second issue. And that is, she's described as chaotic envy mystic hex. And we even get her power level. Power level, probably harmless. I got to kick out. It might ruin your life, but I wouldn't test it, it says. So. Now, she's the girlfriend of the sister.
They are non-binary, I'll say. They use they-them pronouns. But yes, they're Leah's partner. And... yeah, their role in the story is really entertaining to me. I felt like we needed a third person to kind of balance out the dynamic. And they really are just a brilliant collaboration between me and Dalton's sensibilities as well as Fernando Pinto's art style. Because a lot of their personality came out through how Fernando was drawing them.
Now, I have to say there's a wonderful... final panel on the second issue. The sister's getting kind of flung around and she yells out, this is a terrible ending. She goes, which is wonderful. Just a great way to end that. And of course, that carries you on to the next book. And of course, there's five in here and I don't want to talk too much about all five. But
this book is a joy to write, let me tell you.
Well, see, I think that age group hasn't yet discovered responsibility in the purest sense of the word. They're busy. They've been influenced by pop culture. They've been influenced by television commercials. They've been influenced by TV and all this stuff. So they don't look at things the way that the rest of us do. So that makes it fun for the rest of us who know how we would normally react. And when we see them don't react that way, I think that's a lot of fun. So I think that was really well written.
Yeah, they're kids, like it, they're going to react in appropriately over the top ways to everything, because every single decision is the end of the world. And it just so happens that now that Derek has a glove, some of those decisions might lead to the end of the world. So it's always a lot of fun to kind of zig when we should zag, and these characters are just so much fun. And getting to see them bounce off each other and make poor choices and then eventually save the day, that this book is a lot of fun to write.
Now, you guys mentioned a little bit about where the characters came from, but I'd like to explore that a little more. You said a little bit, sometimes they come from your sensibilities, but are they based on people you know? Are they based on you all? Are they based on your imagination, characters that you developed? Where does each of the characters come from?
Yes.
Okay. Because I sometimes I my very first interview I ever did was with David Peterson from Mouse Guard, and I was just convinced that he was writing these characters based on the Round Table, you know, the Knights of the Round Table and stuff. And I asked him, "Who are these people based on?" And he said, "Oh, they're my friends." I went, "Oh," yeah. I said, "They're not the Knights of the Round Table." "Oh no, these are my friends. That's how I know how they're going to react." Yeah, because he knows them real well. And so I was like, oh, so I'm always interested where these come from, because it might not be what I expect.
Yeah, it's always just a cesspool of inspiration when it comes to characters. There's a bit of each of us in every character. There's a bit of people we know. It's never, at least in my experience, it's never a one-to-one, like, this character is this person in my life. It's very much, these are the kinds of interactions that I have in my life, and so I will write this interaction in the way that I have experienced it. And it just so happens that that person that I'm experiencing it with is a friend. And so the dialogue can play back and forth really well, or the way someone reacts to an explosion, you know, like it all comes from experience, but it's never a one-to-one. It's an amalgamation of everything. And I think most writers probably do that, unless you're being very specific. I think most writers tend to, you know, lump everything in and create something new.
Well, I got to ask about another character by the name of Mr. Moore.
Yeah.
We see him right at the beginning. He's the one that fires Derek from the pizza place. And when he discovers what's going on with Mechaton, he comes running back and says, "I'm so glad I caught you. I got worried that you might have taken our conversation earlier the wrong way." Wrong way, he goes. So I love that. What he ends up doing, he ends up using them to try to sell his pizza, which killed me. I have to.
Yeah, he's a slug.
Yeah, yeah, he's kind of every bad boss I've ever had, for sure. just very opportunistic. Doesn't really care about Derek. Doesn't care to hear his point of view. But as soon as he thinks he can get something from him, he wants to be his best friend, and it's very transparently gross what he's doing.
Yeah, he's funny. But they even, he turns into, one of the mechs that he turns into is a pizza mech.
Yeah, Derek agrees to take the job, and then sort of, I think the explanation is that it's like a car that's meant to be like their delivery car,
something cheesy.
Yeah, the something cheesy mobile. But he punches that and it turns into this pizza robot that was a lot of fun to make as a joke. which, you know, when you have a concept as creative as anything you punch turns into a robot, it's hard to resist making those kind of visual puns and jokes about like what it would turn into. I think we wanted to show that, like, Derek is not necessarily in a place where he can tell who has his best interest at heart right now, and he has to learn kind of the hard way that people are willing to take advantage of him when he gets something spectacular, like the power to turn junk into usable punchmobiles.
Well, despite all of that, Derek is still willing to help. Like, you can even see in issue 5, Derek is really, really mad at Mr. Moore, but like, when the guy needs his help, he's still going to give him a chance and help him because he's a person that needs help. And so Derek has to learn how to be an adult while still having a heart. And I think that is something we all need to kind of like pay attention to.
I love the subtitle for issue number 4. It's The title is In the Red, and then the subtitle is Or How to Sell Out Without Catching a Break. Yeah. I love that. That's funny stuff.
We spend way too much time deliberating over long power levels and long subtitles. Yeah.
Comedy is long subtitles and repeated silent frames. That's the only way I know how to do comedy.
Well, we won't go into all the things that he turns into in the first five issues, but really interesting choices along the way. So it's very well done, and it's just such a smart book and a fun book when it comes to, you know, the ability of having mechs and having all kinds of crazy stuff going on with the regular people. It's how would regular people react, and I think it does a beautiful job of sharing that and having fun with that. And at least the question, okay, this is the first collection, the first five. Is this how quickly are you going to be doing more Mechatown?
We would like to turn around and do more right away. Ultimately, it will depend on. But both the availability of the team will have part something to do with it, but mostly it'll just be, how willing people are to buy the next one.
How bad do you want it?
Yeah, we need to if we get the sense that right now we need to be working on something else because the interest just isn't there, then we'll do that. But. You know, we have a really dedicated fan base for this book. They're small, but we're growing, and the people who love it love it. It kind of breaks my heart how I will get emails that are like, "Hey, my kid keeps asking when the next issue is coming out," and I'm like, "I don't know when, but I promise I'll let you know. I want to be making it faster. I do." But yeah, ultimately, it just depends on. You know, how quickly we can get it made, how many people are going to be there to buy it.
Mm-hmm. So it's, again, the project's going to be funded if it reaches this goal by Wednesday, March 6th at 12 noon. When this is done, and let's hope you get to the stretch goals and earn a little extra money, because money almost always goes to the art team. You guys likely will take very little, if anything.
Yes.
As the writers, you get the joy of having your creation being sold. That's what you get out of it.
We get exposure.
In a good way. In a good way. So it's those kind of good things. So, okay, let's where are you in the process of getting the trade out for people? It's going to end March 6th. It takes a little while for Kickstarter to process all this good stuff. And then, of course, you've got the issues done. You just got to collect them and get them off to the press. Is that right?
Yeah, all the art is finished. Right now, we're in the process of designing the book. Brenda Snell is our designer. She is fantastic. Just an excellent creative partner in a lot of ways. And she just made the spine and the back cover. She made the credits page recently, working on just all the back matter and stuff that we're going to put in the book. Really the only thing that we have to wait on is the thank you page. How many people are going to back the book so that we can put them on the thank you page. Before we send it to the printer, and then it's ready to go.
Cool.
You know, wow. This will be a very short turnaround kind of book.
Great, because many times in Kickstarters, I backed the book, and I think it was 5 years later where I finally got the thing back. I said, oh, I remember this book. I remember this book. I paid for this like, what, 5 years ago? Oh. So it was, of course, there was a big apologetic letter that came
out. I feel really bad. Like really pressured and bad and like I, you know, have failed people when it's a month late. So to hear that, like you got it and were like, oh, I remember this and like didn't have any negative feelings toward it does make me feel a little bit better about, you know, occasionally missing, you know, a mark or a projected launch.
The joys of crowdfunding.
Yes, there was one person who said, I've got this great idea. You give me money and I'll turn it into a comic. And everybody was like, yeah, you might just take our money and run with it. But so we said, well, you show us what you're going to make. And, oh, well, I don't think I can do that. Okay, well, we'll move on to another Kickstarter project. Because it's just amazing. The Kickstarter world, crowdfunding world, all the other ones, is an amazing place where interesting things happen. Not always good, but interesting.
It's always so, always news. Anyways,
so here you're far along with this. It's very good. You could hopefully turn this around before too long. And knowing the two of you, you've got other projects you're working on, which I wanted to make sure I took plenty of time so we could talk about those things. Why don't we start off with what you're working on? When this gets done, what will you be working on next? Do you know what that is?
We're working on separate projects, actually, not permanently. We're not separating. This is not a divorce. But we have
because you won't sign the papers, Wells.
Look, I have a right. All right. So I'm working on a comic with my wife. It is called Smut. It is called that because that is what it is. It is the exact opposite of this comic in about as many ways as I can count. Yeah, very not safe for work, hard R rated, kind of a slice of life comedy that involves sex. And Dalton is working on another project that I will allow him to elaborate on.
Yeah, coming next month to Amazon and probably a few other booksellers, I will be launching the first of many novelettes for a new fantasy series called David and the Ostrich Riders. It's a very kind of high fantasy with its tongue planted firmly in cheek, but with a lot of heart. It has a lot of what we call stupid sincerity. When Wells and I work together, Megaton's full of it. Ostrich Riders is full of it. There'll be novelettes, so each one will be released at a monthly kind of clip. And we'll try and get those into full-on novels by the end of the year. But yeah, it's prose. So it's going to be a change, but it's a change that I'm excited for to just kind of play around with words and not have to worry about, waiting for art. It can just be there. And it's an exciting project.
Well, you're going to stretch different writing muscles is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good thing. Cause I, you know, some writers do one thing and only do that, but they do it well. But other writers have the ability to do many more things than just that one thing. And I always appreciate when people want to step out and go and do some other things that are a little different, because I think the world is ready for people who can do many different tasks. So
I hope so.
That's great. That's great. So
I never feel comfortable, I'll say. Like, as soon as I finish a book, I never want to work on this, like, I don't want to do what I think of as the same thing again. I finished last year, I finished a fantasy romance and we put it on Kickstarter and that was great. And I was like, and I said, fantastic. I don't want to think about doing a fantasy romance again for at least another year. Yeah, that's sort of where, the Smut book came from. Was what can I do that's radically different? Never tried this before.
That's radically different. I agree. That's going to be something different. So are you going to Kickstarter it? I guess
I will be putting my book on Kickstarter. Dalton is putting his straight onto Amazon, I believe, and Patreon.
Yeah, yeah. So the chapters will be released monthly on Amazon and like Barnes & Noble and all of your favorite ebook retailers. And if you sign up for the Patreon, which is launching the same month, you will be able to get the next chapter basically immediately. So you'll get it a month before everybody else. And if you see me at conventions, you will actually get the physical edition of that chapter as well. I'll be printing those off and taking them to conventions. So all you physical diehards can grab it there as well.
Okay, you've launched into something next I wanted to ask about. Conventions. Derek, it sounds like you're going to, Derek, Dalton, you're going to be going to conventions.
There. It's fine.
Sounds like you're going to be going to conventions if you're going to print out things. Do you have an idea which conventions you're planning to go to right now?
At the moment, I believe we have a tentative slate, but it nothing is set. We're still on a waiting list for Arkansas Comic Con, I believe. I would like to go to SpaCon in Hot Springs, Arkansas. That's just a fun show to do. But Wells is in Chicago, so he has access to quite a bit more of the convention scene than I do. Maybe C2E2, who knows? Maybe at the Fan Expo,
sure,
but
fan C2E2. But I'm currently on the waiting list for their artist alley, so we will see what happens.
Okay, now. I always encourage people because I love to go to this convention. I'm hoping to get there this year. It's New York Comic Con. And the reason I say that is I go with my roommate and we go and we, if we can, we get a booth in Artist Alley because I swear people go there with money to burn. And we went there with a couple boxes of stuff and literally we were there Sunday afternoon and we were sold out of one of the books that we had. And all we had was a reader copy so people could check it out. And people were coming up saying, can we buy that from you? And we were like, what? Buy the reader copy? Yeah, well, we'd like to buy that. Okay. And they bought it for cover price. And we were like, well, okay. Wow. So literally, the people were buying everything in sight. And so we were trying to get back there again because they do. It's a wonderful. Their artist alley is one of the best I've ever seen as far as that goes.
Yeah, I'd love to go to New York. Never actually been to New York City proper, so that would be a great time in general. But New York Comic Con has been on my list for a while. I would love for this to be the year that I can go. We'll see.
It's got everything imaginable. If you want to buy superheroes on drinking glasses, they'll have a booth that has that. You'll ice cream cups with superheroes on them and stuff like that. Everything you can possibly imagine I found at New York Comic Con because it's just – it's amazing. Although I do have to say, and this is happening at a lot of conventions, that anime is starting to rise up and kind of snuff out some of the comic stuff. So we got to watch. So one complaint I heard about New York Comic Con last year, which I didn't get to go to, was that anime was much larger than before, and people couldn't find the comics.
Supply and demand.
I like to stay positive on podcasts, so I will refrain from commenting.
Okay. All right. If people want to follow you guys on social media, let's start with Wells this time.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter for as long as it is functional at Wells Thomp or Wells Thomp, T-H-O-M-P. It's just my name with the last three letters cut off. Blue Sky is the exact same thing. That said, I am easing off of Twitter and social media in general a little bit more these days. Most consistent way you can find new art and get an idea of what we're doing is through our Substack, through our a newsletter. It's called Comics, Cats, and Cocktails. And you can find that by searching for it or through my website, wellsthompson.com. There you can also find copies of all of our comics and where to buy them.
Okay, and Dalton, how about you?
Social media is a cesspool. I am not on any of it, so the best way to find me is daltonkshannon.com, where you can also find links to all of our comics and links to our newsletter. Newsletter is the best way to keep up with all of your favorite creators, and I us especially.
How often does that come out?
Monthly.
It's once a month, but we do occasional fill-in where we'll do a very short kind of segment, roughly once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks in between the issues. But the big one comes out once a month.
Okay, well, sounds good. Now, let's, one last time, Mechaton Volume 1 is on Kickstarter and will be funded if it reaches its goal by Wednesday, March 6th, 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. And I'm very hopeful by the time this posts that you will be into stretch goals and all kinds of good things are going. But it's always fun to talk with the two of you and keep up the wonderful stuff. And hopefully we'll get to talk again because it's always a fun conversation with you guys.
For sure. Yeah, we love
being on here. Yeah, thanks for having us.
And that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.